Now, in conversation with the Sunday Independent's Barry Egan, Radio Nova.
This is Barry Egan on Radio Nova, and tonight my guest is Frank Murray, manager extraordinaire, raconteur, and wearer of a fantastic moustache. Frank, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Barry. It's great to be here again.
Frank, you're here primarily, you're putting on a show, it's next Sunday, March 3rd.
Yeah.
In honour of Henry McCullough.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about Henry, for people who aren't 100% aware of who he is.
Okay.
I mean, he's played with some incredible bands, Wings.
Yeah. Henry was, first of all, he was, and still is, a brilliant guitar player, you know. And Henry started off with a band here in Ireland called The People. At the beginning, you know, when all the beat groups started and everything like that. And he was in the vanguard of the Irish groups that went to Britain to try and make it, along with Rory Gallagher, I suppose, Van Morrison. And Henry went over with the People to London, and they got snapped up by a guy called Chas Chandler, who was managing Jimi Hendrix at the time. And out of that, they went on tour with Jimmy across America, and he decided that they should change their name to Heir Apparent,
yeah,
but spelling Heir as Era, E-I-R-E, which was strange, as all the boys in the band were from the north of Ireland, and I wouldn't say they were from the Era side, but anyway, that's what first happened, and he went off and played with Hendrix, so that's where he first started to make his name. Touring the world with Jimi Hendrix and playing with Jimmy, and with his band had their name changed to Heir Apparent, and that was a play on, like, they were supposed to be the Heir Apparent.
Where was Henry from? Enniskillen, was it?
I think it was Port Stewart.
Yeah,
I think he's from. Where was it? Okay? He was playing with. Then they went on tour. I think with the Animals.
Yeah.
Around and then unfortunately, I think Henry got arrested for some smoke up in Canada.
Yeah.
So he was kind of sent home.
What year was that, roughly?
Would have been about 68.
Yeah.
Roughly 68.
Yeah.
And then he came back to Ireland, and he hooked up with Sweeney's Men. Andy Irvine had just left Sweeney's Men. And so left were Terry Woods and Johnny Moynihan.
Yeah.
So Henry hooked up with those two, and I think they played a... They played one gig, maybe, which was at the Cambridge Folk Festival. But the thing was, they went electric. Henry brought an electric guitar. So in a way, I guess Sweeney's Men were probably the first electric folk band, you know what I mean, in these islands, anyway.
What age were you when you first saw them?
When I first saw Henry, I was 16, I think. And it was at the old Flamingo Club, which was on O'Connell Street in Dublin. It was right beside, there used to be a big, there was a cafe there, ice cream and chips and fish and chips, whatever, like, called the Rainbow. You can still see, if you look in O'Connell Street, you can still see the shape of the rainbow in the building there. But they used to have coloured lighting on it. And there was a beat club there called the Flamingo. So that was the first place I saw them. And... it was the last place I saw them as well. And I think later on that night, I remember, that Sunday night, I think it was, I left there at about 11:30, 12 o'clock to get a last bus home. And at about an hour and a half later, old Nelson got blown to smithereen. So I was lucky I wasn't there.
Where were you getting the bus home to?
I was in the walk. I lived in Walkinstown.
Yeah.
You know, that's where I lived. So I was on my
way
home.
To put Henry aside for 1 second, was that... where you got the grow to be in the music business? To was your father in the...
No, my father was a coach builder, actually, in the CIE.
Yeah.
But I kind of got it...
Because for people who don't know, Frank Murray, you know, you managed the Pogues, the Frames, you worked with Phil Lynott, Thin Lizzy, lots of bands.
I started, again, it was about 15 or 16, and I met Philip Lynott. I met him, and he's with a band called the Black Eagles. He used to play in our local hall in Walkinstown, the Moran Road Hall, and they'd play there on Sunday nights. And at that time, we were all
kindred spirits in a way.
Yeah, well, we were all. There was like you either followed show bands really, or you followed beat groups. And the irony was, both of them were kind of doing covers. You know,
yeah.
But at least the beat groups had aspirations. Do you know what I mean? The show bands, it was like...
kind of wedding bands, in a way.
Yeah, well, they've kind of done... You know, some of them were good rock bands, but and a lot of them were country and Irish and stuff like that. So, us being that new generation...
You were kind of rebelling, rejecting
it. We were rebelling, yeah. So, we became almost like zealots to help Ireland have a rock scene. You know, we were always looking at London and what was coming out of London or Liverpool and Manchester or out of America.
What did radio think of those bands then?
Not a lot.
Yeah.
Radio played mostly showband music and, well, they played Beatles and whatever was in, played on Top of the Pops, you know, Searchers. I mean, there was good music that you could listen to. Yeah. There was a lot of dross in there as well. But at least they were playing the Stones and Hendrix was considered, you know, that word pop music is a strange word. But the Beatles were considered, you know, pop, and Hendrix was considered, you know, pop in a way. But there were more than that.
I mean, you became a manager eventually, but did you ever think of playing guitar yourself? The Frank Murray experience?
I think... you some experience, yeah. All right. I think one of my problems was, I remember getting a guitar, borrowing a guitar off someone, and my father would say, I don't know why you're even attempting that. He'd say, you'll just throw it aside in a few days like everything else.
Yeah.
And that was a bit soul-destroying, so I blame my father.
So you were a young kid when you met Philip for the first time?
Yeah, I was 15, 16.
And what age were you when you started work with him?
I was about 16.
Yeah.
I said that he left the Black Eagles, and then Brush Shields called on him. And Brush was starting a band, it was called Skid Row. And Brush needed a front man, a singer. It was important that you had a singer that would attract women.
Yeah.
Right? So no better man to have up front than Philip.
Yeah.
So I started like sort of like roadieing with them, you know. It was just like a buzz to go around to all these different halls in Dublin, you know. And all,
were you still at
all
school
the tennis
then?
Clubs. Yeah.
And what did your old man think?
He was, well, I was 16.
Like, he thought you'd grow out of it.
Yeah, I was 16, and I guess there's not an awful lot of your father can say you're 16 or 17, you know?
Yeah.
Can he? You know? I mean, I wasn't doing anything bad. We were only playing. You don't even really get to have gigs at the weekend, you know what I mean?
And it became a bit more serious for you, though.
It became serious. Well, it always was kind of serious because, as I said, we were on a mission, and we were only looking for a way out, and you needed somebody with courage. You know, band. Someone in the band said, "Okay, we're going over to London," because it was quite a jump to get over there, and look for flats. And they got. I remember Skid Row getting management over there. Lucky enough, we got a guy called Clifford Davis who managed Peter Green and Fleetwood Mac at the time.
Yeah.
So he had a lot of connections. So we got quite busy straight away. You know.
And when did it become Thin Lizzy?
It never became Thin Lizzy. What happened was Philip Brush sacked Philip.
It's a clever move.
Well, it's a little bit more complicated than that. But Skid Row had become like a band of instrumentalists, you know what I mean? Like everybody was taking solos.
Like a heavy metal Shadows kind of thing?
Yeah, it was like, you know, the drummer would take a 10, Noel Bridger would take a 10-minute solo, and Brush was always playing these very sophisticated bass riffs that went on, and Gary Moore, once Gary took a solo, you know, you never knew when he was going to come back.
What age was Gary?
Gary was 16 at
the time. You're all kids?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. We were kids with dreams.
Yeah. But, I mean, when you look back, it's so sad that the two guys we've mentioned are longer with us, Gary and Phil.
That is so sad. That is so sad, you know. And like every day, because my age, you know, I just see stuff on Facebook, so-and-so's dead, so-and-so's dead. And I just read today that old Kevin Ayers died over in England. So, I don't know, there's people, I guess when you get to my age, we're like parrots falling off a perch.
Yeah. And just to give a kind of a thumbnail sketch of your career, yeah. Thin Lizzy.
Okay, I started off really professionally, I suppose, with Skid Row. And I went on touring America with them in 1970. And then I worked with... Then after a while, I left them and I started to work with Terry Woods. He got a band together called the Woods Band.
Yeah.
So I helped them put that together and worked with them for a while. And then I came back to Ireland and I worked for Noel Pearson, putting on shows in the theatre. And then... Lizzie were in London, but they had a hit, Whiskey in the Jar. So Phil called me and said, Frank, I need a tour manager. Will you come over? And I said, yeah, sure. So I went over and I started working with Lizzie then. And that went on for a good while.
How long?
Well, I worked with them for about 3 years around that period. And then...
Did you just see Philip disintegrate his health?
I kind of did. But by the time I had stopped working with Lizzie... Philip was still healthy then, you know what I mean? It started, I guess, around 19... In the 80s, I think, you know, when it started to get bad, around 1980, I think, you know.
And would he listen to anybody?
Not initially.
I mean, even as, like, you knew him when you were, like, both
yeah,
of your kids.
I mean, I had heart-to-hearts with him.
Yeah.
And...
But I suppose you can't talk to somebody who doesn't want to listen.
Well, no, but, you know, at the, you know... You know, at the end of the day, somebody has got to want to give up. It doesn't matter whether it's drink, whether it's pills. Somebody has got... They've got to make that decision themselves. I'm giving up. I'm giving up for me, not for anybody else. You have to give up for yourself, and it starts there. And you have to... You know, there's too many... I know too many examples of people going into rehab, been out a week, back to where they started, you know?
Yeah.
You know, because somebody put them in there or forced them in there or they went in. In fact, some people go into rehab just to get away from people annoying them to go in there, you know.
Can you remember the last conversation you had with Phil?
What did I say? Kind of, wasn't really...
I suppose you don't know it's going to be the last. So.
No, you don't. I remember kind of around the last times I saw him. I remember going off to his house in Kew. There was a party on. I went in and... You just see the people who are there and you go, these are not the regulars. You know, there's some weirdos here. And I remember going upstairs and I asked where was Philip. They said he's upstairs in his bedroom, in his bed. So I went upstairs and I was going into the bedroom and some weirdo guy sort of said, hey, where are you going? And some like, who are you? And I just said, who are you?
Yeah.
And Phil could hear my voice. And he said, he always used to call me... Prunchius, or Frankie Lee, called me. And he goes, is that you, Prunchius? Come on in. So I went in, and we had a chat there for about an hour or so. And I went back downstairs. Now, I guess I saw him later on that night. I didn't see him again after that, I don't think.
And can you remember when you heard? Where were you? Were you in London?
No, I had just left. I had just left London to come to Ireland for a tour with the Pogues. And
you were managing the Pogues at that stage?
Yeah. And we were going, I think I was just in, we just arrived in Waterford, I think, to start the tour. And my wife called me to say someone had been on the phone, say Phil had gone into hospital. And so then I made a call to a few people and I heard it was bad. So I got on a plane the next day and went back to London, you know.
Yeah.
So, and then he died a few days after that.
What was it like? You managed the Pogues for, was it about...
I don't know, 7 or 8 years or something.
Yeah. What moments stand out in that time? I mean, I know it was an incredible journey for you. Mm. Hanging out with them and Tom Waits in New York and all that kind of stuff. Or...
Yeah, I mean, I loved the recording of Rum, Sodomy and the Lash.
Yeah.
And seeing that unfold. I really loved that. That was a magical experience. I guess I enjoyed the touring and the travelling with them, you know what I mean? It was pretty wild, but it was fun most of the time. There was a time towards 1990, you know, 89, 90, it started to get a bit dark, you know. And...
Why was that?
The band was starting to fracture, you know. And Shane was misbehaving, I suppose, to put it mildly.
Yeah.
So... things were edgy, in the wrong kind of edgy way.
And you didn't want to be the headmaster, you just wanted
to
be the manager.
Well, I mean, I was at the back of my mind was Philip.
Yeah, well, I was thinking that.
Do you know what I mean? Oh, and so I was trying to stop that happening.
But it's the same with Shane, if he didn't want
to... And, well, I mean, and Shane, I had Shane admitted to a lot of places, you know, but it really didn't work. Yeah. But I must say...
Well, Shane will probably outlive both of us.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I've spoke to Shane there, you know. I've been speaking to Shane quite regularly over the last few months, and there's a great improvement in Shane. I mean, really good improvement, you know. I mean, I never thought he'd get back to this stage again. It's really positive and uplifting, you know.
And just let's go back to...
Henry. Okay.
What happened with Henry? He had a heart problem.
He got a heart attack just a few months back, and went into hospital, got an ambulance, and he hasn't really kind of recovered, do you know what I mean? He's out of the coma, and I don't want to go, you know what I mean? I don't know where it's right for me to talk about people's health, on air and stuff like that, but... he's not the best, you know, at the moment. So we're hoping with care and, you know, good care. And he's home now. I'm not sure if he's really aware of everything that's going on around him.
Yeah.
But the whole thing is he needs a lot of love and care. And the reason we're putting the show on is to try and get him initially some kind of money, you know, to him and his partner, Josie.
Yeah.
So it's... like the first few months, I mean, that it's going to be very hard on Josie and stuff like that. So just to ease the financial burden on them, you know.
And who have you got involved in this gig next Sunday?
Well, I mean, there's an incredible lineup. I mean, it just shows you how well the Irish music community, you know, value and think of Henry. There's Christy Moore and Declan Sinnott. Sweeney's Men are reforming. It's only probably the second time Sweeney's Men have reformed in 20 years, or 30 years even. Mick Flannery, Fly Cowboys, Johnny Doohan.
Philip Donnelly, I see that.
Philip Donnelly, Anna Heffernan, Ed Dean. Sarah Petite is coming over from America. So there'll be all sorts of guests.
Why don't you ask Paul McCartney, because Henry played with Wings for years, didn't he? And he wrote My Love, well, he wrote the guitar solo on that.
Yeah, I put in a request to Paul's people last... week or week before. Nothing's come back to me yet. But I'm hoping, like, even if Paul doesn't get over on his Beetle jet, that he might give something maybe for auction or something, you know, something like, contribute in some way, you know. I'm sure he will.
Yeah.
I'm sure he will. He valued Henry. They had a bit of a fallout when Henry left Wings. But
what was that about?
I'm not quite sure, and the story I've heard, I wouldn't tell anyway, but Paul did play in the O2 relatively recently.
Yeah.
And he gave a shout out to Henry, and Henry, I know, was backstage with him afterwards up in the dressing room and socialising with him. So
whatever problems they have,
they're finished with him. Anyway, Henry's too much of a gentleman. I don't think you could fall out with Henry for too long.
Yeah.
You know.
What kind of guy is he?
Well, he's a very quiet, unassuming kind of person. Very talented, and lives and just lives for music. You know, he has played with. Besides Joe Cocker and all that, he played with Wings, right? Okay. Then after Wings, another Beatle, George Harrison, who had just started a record label called Dark Horse Records, signed Henry. So getting two Beatles to sign him, it's quite good, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He also is the only Irishman to have played at Woodstock, to the best of our knowledge, played with Joe Cocker and the Grease Band. So you see Henry playing guitar on that. He also played guitar on the first... recording of the original recording of Jesus Christ Superstar, which is a strange one.
Yeah.
And he's featured on Dark Side of the Moon somewhere.
Really?
Yeah. I think he's just a voice on it. He was recording in a studio next door to the Floyd, and they were looking for people to come in and say a sentence or two, I think. So Henry is one of those voices doing the...
You've only had some publishing on this.
I know.
you wouldn't have to put on this show.
I know.
What's your favourite song by Henry?
He has a great song called Failed Christian, which I really like. And he has a CD that came out about a year ago called Poacher's Moon. And I kind of like everything on that.
What kind of stuff is that?
It's all very rootsy, you know. It's all sort of blues.
Yeah.
/ Hank Williams.
Isn't everything these days?
Well...
Including your own band.
No, excuse me, always was and always will be.
Yeah.
You know, when you want to get real, you have to go back to the roots and forget all this boy band, whatever.
Yeah. Well, the Beatles were only a boy band for a while anyway, as were the Stones until they discovered
Delta. I dispute that, totally. I dispute that. These boy bands trying to legitimize themselves or whatever, saying, yeah, but the Beatles were a boy band. Please.
Yeah.
You know, some of those bands, like the Beatles or the Stones, like the intros to some of their songs are better than the combined works of some of some boy bands.
Yeah.
I don't care whether they've sold 100 million records.
Maybe we should have sent Westlife to Hamburg got the edges knocked off them.
Well, you know,
yeah,
they could have done with a bit of a reality.
What was it like managing the Frames? You managed them for a long time.
I managed them for the first two CDs. That was good. It was very frustrating because at the time that we put out those records, we had a first deal was with Island Records in the UK, and the second was with Trevor Horn's record label, ZTT. And the problem was, at that time, England was obsessed with Brit rock.
Yeah.
You know, like Oasis and Blur, The Verve. I mean, the Frames couldn't get a look in. It was like, you're going to Radio 1, BBC, to who? Yeah, forget it, you know. They just wanted this music, and there was no room for the Frames at all. And
but you seemed to make room for them, didn't you?
Well,
I mean, they played the when it was the Point a good few times. And
yeah, I mean, they didn't play the Point when I was managing them. I mean, their success came after... after me, you know?
Yeah.
And that was, a lot due to people, first of all, in Dublin, because they could play Whelan's and, like, there'd be queues down Camden Street to see them. So, like, that, whatever knockbacks they were getting in England, they could come back and re-energise themselves by knowing that they were loved in Dublin.
Yeah.
Right? And then, and that spread around the country, and... they became like kind of a student kind of band, and then Glenn became this kind of figure, I think, where people either loved him or hated him, you know, but the love part won, you know.
What kind of guy is Frank Murray? I mean, when he goes
still
home,
mixed up.
Yeah, he's still a zealot about music?
I am. I still have a great passion for music, yeah, and I hate to see things, you know, like,
I mean,
a couple of weeks ago they had the Super Bowl and someone said Beyonce mimed, you know, to the national anthem or whatever. I hate stuff like that. I hate people saying, yeah, I was out there all night and I was miming.
Yeah.
That really does my head in.
You strike me as the kind of guy who couldn't manage a band you didn't like.
No, I couldn't. I mean, you have to watch them every night.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? It drives you mad.
But some people do it just for the bread, for the money.
Yeah, I know, but... I could never do that, you know what I mean? Because if you believe in a band or a musician or a solo artist or whatever, if you really believe in them, when success, and you believe success will come, you know, if they're good. And anything like money is a byproduct then, that comes. But if you start focusing on the money first, other than the kind of money you need to get from gig to gig and live your daily life, you know, and pay your hotel bills or whatever. If you started thinking about, where's my mansion on the hill? And, where's my Bentley?
Do you live in a mansion?
Or whatever. I quote the Bible. It's a mansion on the hill. No, I don't. No.
Can you remember the first time you met Shane McGowan and you thought, God, this guy's a genius. Mm. Or he's got something that's not everybody has.
I don't really subscribe to the, you know, the genius part of it, you know. But he's a great songwriter.
Yeah.
Great songwriter. And I suppose you could put poet in there, you know.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until I started to work with him, really, you know, watching them every night and then gradually listen to the lyrics and stuff like that, you know. Again, most of it came during... Roma Sodomy Lash, the recording of that record, you know, when I'd go down in the...
Is that when you joined? What was the one before Red?
Red Roses for Me.
Yeah.
They had that out. I had nothing to do with that record. It was after they had released that I started managing them. And the first record I was involved in with him was Rob Sodomy and the Lash.
Yeah.
So there was that, and then we'd done that Pogatry
in Motion.
In Motion.
The
and then you had and then we had like the Body of an American. You know, that's superb. Super. And then Rainy Night in Soho, I think, is on that, and London Girl.
Yeah.
All great, beautiful songs. You know.
What kind of music do you listen to when you go home? What are your favourite albums? Go home to the mansion on the hill.
I can't make it up the hill anymore.
Yeah.
I like to listen to, if I'm really down, you know, I'm Astral Weeks.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a hymn to me, you know. That's, you know, if you're depressed or anything like that, and you want to just say, okay, I'm turning everything off and I just want to get in touch with myself or wipe out everything bad or negative, I will listen to Astral Weeks. That never fails. The first track, you know, the bass, the singing,
yeah,
the words, it just transports you away, for a start.
How would you be managing someone like Van Morrison?
I nearly did, actually. He asked me to manage him sometime in the 90s. And we went out for the night, and I guess we said goodbye or good morning at about 6 in the morning. I went home, and then the next day I was thinking about it. So I was talking to him and his accountant, and I was sort of saying to Van, look, you've got to give me a day or two, you know, to think about it. And then he was saying, okay, then when are you going to call me? I said something like Friday, and he said to me, the year will be gone off me by then, Frank. And I said, okay, let's forget about it, Van. I don't think it'll be a good idea. But I mean, it might have been, I don't know, but I wasn't in
the frame of mind.
I had other things going on in my life.
Yeah.
And
do you have regrets about that?
Pardon?
Do you have regrets about that?
No, because where I was in my life, my private life, my personal life, the energy I would have had to put into managing Van, it would have been too stressful for me, you know. I wasn't really in a headspace. I mean, it was a great compliment to be asked. You also know, one day you're going to get sacked. Do you know what I mean?
It's like managing Man United or Chelsea, probably.
Yeah, you don't know whether you're going to last 6 months, a year, or whatever, but that's
all right. Had the gig.
Yeah. You know, you mightn't get past the first gig with him.
So what other bands do you listen to at home, then? What other albums would you put on?
I go back and I listen a lot to...
Can you listen to Phil Lynott? Without getting upset?
Yes, sometimes, yeah. It's not really on my... my listening stuff. I tend to listen to old. I'm going back really old stuff now. Or I listen to a lot of Miles Davis sometimes.
Yeah.
I like old
folk, like
American folk and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And sometimes I watch that thing on the television, Come West Along the Road. I really enjoy that. You know, that traditional stuff. But you know, kind of. I like great songwriters. You know, Bobby Charles, Hank Williams, anybody like that. You know, I like to put on.
What about more modern stuff?
Hank Williams is modern. No, I really don't. Like, who would you say is modern, you know, that I should be listening to?
The Killers, I don't know. Arcade Fire.
Fire, I've listened, I've watched them a few times. I'm not big on listening to
Bon Iver.
A lot of their records, you know, because to me, a lot of that stuff I've heard before.
Yeah.
I'm not criticising them, you know what I mean? But I've heard it done differently, and I could go back and probably get you a better version of them. But I think it's really good. And the blues is great to listen to.
Yeah.
If you're down, listen to the blues, because funny enough, it makes you happy. You know, I like great guitar, like Buddy Guy. Hendrix is always uplifting. The Band, Levon Helm, these kind of guys.
What did you think of Dylan's Tempest?
I haven't listened to that much. I was on tour in America at the end of last year with the Lost Brothers and Glenn Hansard, and each time we'd get into a cab, Oisín would go to the cab driver, will you play the CD, and he'd hand over the CD to the cab driver, but we never got past the second track. That, like, the journeys were never long enough.
Yeah.
And sometimes we only got to the end of the first track, so I never really heard it. And I'm dying to hear that John Lennon song he wrote about.
Yeah.
That, you know. But Dylan is always great.
Did you meet him with the Pogues?
You don't really meet there, Bob, you know what I mean? He'll come along and shake your hand and say hiya, and that's kind of it for the tour.
So you got Bob's DNA on your hand then?
I have, yeah. He did go out and he used to go out into the crowd when we're playing with the Pogues with a hoodie on him, you know, a leather jacket, and he'd watch, and then because we'd hear this, you know, and then once or twice we actually saw him.
So that story wasn't true about Dylan's people telling your people that they didn't want swearing on stage or anything like that?
No. Dylan would never say that.
Yeah.
Dylan would never say that.
So will you be emceeing next Sunday, Frank?
I won't, no. We have two MCs. We have Ronan Collins and BP Fallon.
Yeah.
Both very good friends of Henry. BP is probably goes back to 60, whatever. You know, really, really good friend of Henry's, you know.
And is there any chance of Henry being there himself?
No, unfortunately not. No,
yeah.
No, no, no. But I tell you, it'll be a great night, and it'll be a long time before you see a bill, you know, as great as this, like in Vicker Street. Not like you can go to a festival, probably, and you see a band or a bill as good as this, you know. And you know, Declan Sinnott's going to not only play with Christy Moore, he's going to do some work with Victor McCullough, who's Henry's brother.
Yeah.
And they're going to do some songs. And I think he's going to work with Noel Bridgman as well on it, you know.
So have you any ideas of what kind of encore we're looking at? Can it be like Last Waltz or something?
Well, it could be. I just hope they don't do Knocking on Heaven's Door or whatever the other one they do, I Shall Be Released. I hope they don't do that.
And what about your other pal, Van? Do you think you can get him along for this?
I think there's going to be one in Belfast.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping Van will make an appearance on that. Or at least...
Sure, doesn't he live in Dalkey? Why can't he come to this one?
Because, you know, I never know where he lives. Van seems to be like... he moves a lot. I heard he was living up in Hollywood, County Down, and I heard he was living in all kinds of places.
Let's not give away his address, anyway.
Pardon?
Let's not give away his address.
Oh, yeah, sorry. So, anyway, you know, Van's always on the move. And Van, if you're listening tonight, come on down to Vicker Street and sing a few songs on March the 3rd for Henry.
Exactly, and you know, you can play Astral Weeks in its entirety before the show just to get everyone in the mood.
Astral Weeks is like, you know, a lot of young bands today, even if they're pop bands, could do a lot worse than, you know, put that on, put the headphones on. Listen to it on vinyl or on CD, don't be...
Do you have kids, don't you?
Yeah, stacks of kids. I've got four children.
What do you play them?
I don't play them anymore, but they used to, I suppose, hear...
What do they grow up on?
Well, they grew up of listening to me shouting at bands on the telephone.
Yeah.
Various musicians. And
so were you plagued by them? Were having them and all their friends, 50 people on the guest list for this? And
no, my children, at the time, you know, I quit. When I finished the Pogues, my children were at that strange age, you know, of maybe 12, 13. So they wouldn't have wanted to do that. But now... every year it's like, Dad, can you get me this festival, can you get me that festival, the other festival? They're my kids, you know, so I go up and with my brass neck and I ask my friends who promote these festivals, can my son have two passes for this or two passes for that? I mean, what else can you do, you know? You've got to help them. But one guy, my eldest, Emmett, he seems to be into, he's into a lot of hip-hop and rap and all that kind of thing, mainly. But he has come back now to the foundations of rock and roll. He's listening to old stuff like Little Richard and a lot of things that came out of New Orleans. Yeah. So he's listening to a lot of that stuff now. And I've got my youngest, Aaron, he listens to, I guess, what you'd call new stuff, you know. And I've been teaching him. I've been sending some blues records his way, so he... If you don't know where it's coming from, how do you know where it's going?
But do you look on, like, say, Jack White? Do you see that as essentially just a bad copy of some good stuff?
No, Jack White is good. I think he's very good, and he has a genuine love for that well he goes to. You know what I mean? It's the same way as Shane McGann went to this well to draw and came up with something great. And I think Jack does the same. And he's a superb guitar player. I went to see him here in Dublin at the O2, and he had his girl band play. You know what I mean? He has two bands, a male band and a female band. And I was with a couple of the male band that day, and I'd taken them up to the Blue Light, and I was taking them up to Johnny Fox's. And like they were sitting there, and they got a text on their phone that said, female band tonight. And they were going, great, let's get drunk. So you just kind of find out about 2 PM, whether you're on the show that night or you're not on the show that night. So I thought that was good.
Did they sit in the audience with you then?
Yeah, they said two of them did. Some of them just let off staying backstage on the bus and got drunk, because there were a lot of bands, you know, they after Dublin, they leave on those coaches and head out to Dunleary or whatever the ferry's leaving from, you know, the Dublin port, and head over to the
UK. What would be your favourite Jack White song?
Couldn't really say, quite honest with you.
We'll play one for you anyway.
Yeah, will you?
We will, okay, if you're good.
Jack is good.
Just to finish up, tell the listeners the story of Elton John. Didn't he ring you up and wanted you to come and work for him?
Yeah, well, I got word from his office, kind of, you know what I mean, that I was...
You didn't think he fancied you, did he? With the moustache and everything you had there?
No, this was... I didn't have the moustache then, but somebody else did.
Someone else in his crew fancied you?
Well, somebody else in that organisation did, big time.
Yeah.
I got into trouble over it as well. But that you have to wait and read my book before that one comes out.
But is that why you turned down Elton John's offer?
No, I worked for Elton John.
For how long?
For just a European tour, I done with him.
Yeah.
A European and UK tour. I done it. And he stopped. He had retired. Not retired, he just wasn't going to go out on the road with a big band anymore. And he got fed up after a Wembley show one night. And then I guess, as is Elton's wont, after about a year, he decided he was going to go and do a tour again.
Yeah.
And he only used Ray Cooper, who was the percussionist.
Yeah.
So the tour was called a single man tour. And he wouldn't play stadiums. We played in all these opera houses all around Europe, which was brilliant, you know.
When was that? Because I saw that show recently.
Yeah, it was at the Point, yeah. This was 19...
It was bizarre.
Yeah, this was 1979. It was very good.
If you like drumming.
Well, he only came on the second half of the show. Elton, you know, whacked out the first half, and then Ray came on the tour, I don't know, anyway. Came on the second. And he's good, you know, Ray's good. He played a lot with the Beatles and George Harrison and stuff.
What kind of personality do you need to do this job?
I don't know.
Is it kind of equal parts psychologist?
You need to be everything.
Teacher, father.
You need lots of things. I mean,
we also need the patience of a saint, don't you?
Yeah, sometimes. It's hard. It's hard when you're telling young bands. I find that the most difficult thing is if you take a band that hasn't really done anything and you start to work with them, and you say, "No, don't do that," and they go, "Yeah, I want to do it." And you say, "Look, I don't think you should do that." And you go, "Yeah, I want to do it." So then, okay, let them do it if that's what they want to do. You know? And then things go horribly wrong. And you just go, "Look, I told you." It's a bit like...
So is it like if you fall off that tree, don't come running to me and break your legs?
Well, unfortunately, that they will come running to you. But it is a bit like that. But it's like... It's a jungle out there, you know. So if you want to go through a jungle, you definitely want to go through it with someone who's been through the jungle a few times. You know, as your guide.
Do you have spear marks on your back and everything?
I have a lot of things on my back.
A monkey, even.
No, he's gone.
But you seem like you're in a good place.
I am now. I'm in a good place at the moment. Thank God, yeah. I'm alive anyway.
So was your life in part a bit like maybe some of the songs you would have liked, the blues songs about redemption and stuff like that?
Yeah, well, I guess my life is no different than anyone else's, really. Like, no matter how glamorous or whatever it seems like, we all have to deal with ourselves at the end of the day. And it doesn't matter if you're a bus conductor, you know what I mean, a roadie, or even a musician. Sometimes, okay, if you're a musician and you're very wealthy, having a lot of money might ease it.
Yeah.
You know? But generally speaking, you know, you have to face yourself every day in the mirror and just try and sort things out, you know. Just try and sort things out and... find your moral compass and try and be balanced, you know. And that takes a long time, because a lot of times you can just lose your balance, and you don't do it for a day, you can do it for a few years.
Yeah.
And you come back and, you know, you say, "Hey, I better change, you know, and find myself again."
When did that happen? You didn't say why, I said when.
It happens a few times, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you're constantly you constantly have to kind of like check yourself, you know.
But it's always going to happen, because I think it's like Dylan said, you think you're enlightened and it's like walking through the forest in the dark with a candle.
Yeah.
As soon as you think you're enlightened, the candle blows out and you're in the dark again.
Yeah. I mean,
so, you know.
Thanks, Bob. But It's like,
well, it
you do, no, no, but it's, you do have